You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. We're here today with Kelly Daynard, the Executive Director of Farm and Food Care Ontario. Kelly has been Executive Director with Farm and Food Care Ontario for 4 years. She's been involved with the organization for 16 years and has a background in agriculture as well. Kelly, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
Can you just give us a little bit of a background here and maybe a little more on yourself, a little more on what the importance of Farm and Food Care Ontario is and what you do?
Absolutely. So I was raised on a corn, wheat, and soybean farm west of Guelph, and I will admit that when I started off to university, I didn't have any intentions of ending up working in agriculture. I had a dream of being a newspaper reporter, and that was the path I had pursued. When I achieved that goal, working for a small weekly newspaper in southwestern Ontario, I found myself getting increasingly annoyed when the other reporters would get their facts wrong, especially about farm topics. And I remember one day my editor calling me into his office and saying, "Hey, Kelly, you might as well just be our farm editor, farm reporter." And that's where my my journey began in agricultural communications. I have a firm belief that everybody has a story to tell, and every farmer has a story to tell. And when I got the opportunity to join Farm and Food Care many years ago, it was an amazing opportunity for me to combine that passion for agriculture and try to build a connect between farmers and between the consumers that buy their products. And that's how I ended up here. Farm and Food Care, we are one of three farm and food care organizations in Canada. We have a sister group in Saskatchewan and one in Prince Edward Island. And our number one mandate is to build that connect between farmers and consumers and try to provide consumers with a credible source of information so that when they have questions about food and farming, they can find the accurate answers.
Yeah, I know one of the major issues that I've always found is that there's can be quite a disconnect between our consumers and our farmers. My wife was born and raised in Mississauga. My in-laws very, very interested in agriculture, but they had no point of reference, and they didn't know anything about agriculture. I certainly, after hanging around me for a lot of years, they would find out a fair bit, but certainly initially they didn't have any idea on that. How widespread is this?
You know, I often tell farmers that I meet in meetings or when I do speaking engagements that they're a bit like leprechauns or unicorns. People really want to believe that they exist, but they don't know where they are. And they can be a bit of a mythical creature for somebody who lives in downtown London or Ottawa or Toronto. We've got an increasing disconnect just for the way that our world has gone. You know, we've got, so many less farms now than we did generations ago. Farming is a really tough way to make a living, and people have moved into town in increasing numbers. So, you know, my family, the majority still are farm connected, but we're an increasingly rare breed of people. And I know a lot of my urban friends, they don't know how many generations now they're removed from their farming ancestors. They don't have any concept of where they would have been.
It's amazing. If you go back to the 1930s, we had pretty close to half of our population that was involved in agriculture from a farming standpoint, primary agriculture. We're down to less than 1% that are farmers now.
That's exactly true. And I think then there's the disconnect between people not knowing a farmer and then some really outdated views about agriculture. Because if people do have a vision of what a farmer looks like or what their farm looks like, it might be a farm that looks much more like my grandparents' or great-grandparents' farms in Perth County from the 40s and 50s, where they had, you know, a little bit of everything, and the average consumer doesn't recognize that farmers have had to get bigger because we're feeding a growing population with less people to do it, and also more specialized.
Yeah, if you go back, for me, two generations to my grandfather, there was a farm that had, as you say, a little bit of everything on it. And yet my father was involved in the dairy industry to start, and then moved into the hog industry. And the two of those didn't overlap. Like he was strictly with one type of livestock at any given time.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. So I think when people meet a farmer, regardless of what commodity they produce, if you meet a farmer, you're going to think that he or she knows everything about everything from cucumbers to raising chickens. And so that's often a source of disconnect as well.
Yeah, and you touched on, like, for some people, they're one generation off the farm, and there's a lot of information there. But for many people, as you say, they can't even begin to describe how many generations it's been. And a lot of times that their travels stop at the edge of Toronto.
Exactly. Many people, I mean, and you think of Toronto as a good example, they don't even own vehicles. So unless they're going to the St. Lawrence Market, perhaps, to buy products from, you know, some of our members or some of the farmers that sell there, they're going to have very, very few opportunities to meet a real farmer.
But I think that most consumers, or at least a large number of consumers, are very interested in buying locally, and there is a lot of curiosity about what goes on, what happens to that food before it gets to the supermarket.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that. So the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity, which is an amazing Canadian organization that does a lot of research in this area, they do consumer testing every year, and the survey results that they've done the last couple of years show that the majority of Canadians really do want to know where their food comes from, like 60% plus. They just maybe don't know where to go for that source. So I've always said there will always be that percentage of the population that really don't care where their food comes from. They just want the cheapest source, and that's totally fine. But I think, you know, the local food movement, the 100-mile diet, all of those things, now COVID, people are increasingly wanting to buy local, support local, and they want a connection with their food. Food is, you know, the thing that connects us all.
It's something that most of us try to do three times a day, and some of us do maybe more often than they should. But no, I agree. I think that I think a lot of them do want to know. I think a major issue, though, is if you want to know information, a word that wasn't in the dictionary 30 years ago, we Google it, and that's not necessarily always the best source of information that we can find.
No, you're right. But I mean, the internet is also a space that agriculture can participate in, and it's not expensive. And I think back to when I started in agricultural communications, the organization I worked for in my first farm career, you know, we might update our website every couple of months when a new stat came up. And of course, the world changes rapidly. And with social media and with Google and with all of these tools available at our fingertips, we now have an opportunity to participate in that space. And I remember early days of Twitter. I wasn't a fan of Twitter yet. I couldn't quite figure out what it would be used for. And then the one day, I had been sent home to watch a daytime special, one of the, and I won't name who it was, but there was some anti-agriculture people on a very well-known international talk show. And so I went home to watch that talk show, and I was watching it, and I was watching Twitter at the exact same time. And all of a sudden, you could see farmers across North America chiming in on real time, like, hey, you know, this show, this isn't the way we raise our animals. Hey, we'd love to give you a tour. Hey, you know, follow my Twitter handle and I'll show you pictures. And I remember thinking, that's amazing, because we never before had the opportunity to participate in real time in the same spaces as some people that would rather not have us all in business.
That's a really granular way that farmers do get involved in the conversation. And if people are looking to listen to those people and they can get on the right topics, certainly that's a great way for people to get involved. A friend of mine who's in his 60s, I was surprised once at how active he was on social media. And he says, Mike, you know, once I get the tractor turned around and I lock in the auto steer, I really don't have very much to do for the next 15 minutes until I've got to turn it around again. So there's a lot to that on how people can get involved. What's Farm and Food Care's role in all of this?
So yeah, we don't want to be the ones telling the story. We want to be the ones making the connection. So, you know, we do that through many different ways. But if I can find a way of making a connection between a farmer or one of our other members in the food processing or agribusiness sector directly with a consumer, then I feel like I've done a good job of that. So, you know, some of the projects that your listeners might be familiar with, we do a booklet called The Real Dirt on Farming every 3 years, where we use the Canadian Center for Food Integrity's data. We find out what the top questions and concerns are about from Canadians about their food, and then we write that booklet to answer their questions. In non-COVID worlds, we host an awful lot of bus tours for food influencers like chefs and culinary instructors and dietitians and home economists and people who have a really big circle of influence. They're writing about food, they're prepping food, they're telling their clients about food. So we take them out to farms and have them ask their questions in real time of farmers. What else? We have a series that recognizing that we can't take every single person in Ontario out to a farm, you know, first of all, logistics, second of all, biosecurity. We have a virtual reality farm tour website where you can tour farms and feed mills and food processing facilities. And last year, we had about 3 million people tour farms virtually through that site. So we're always looking for ways, creative ways, to build meaningful connections and to try to connect people with their food.
That website's fantastic. I use that. I do some training with people that aren't as familiar with some types of farming, and I find that's a fantastic website to go to, and the ability to walk through. You see videos of real farmers, real operations, but the virtual 360 tours that you can get in there are fantastic because they give you a real view of places that unless you're in the industry, you just don't get there.
And thank goodness we did have resources like that to use during COVID. It was very early days, and I got a phone call late March, from my website designer, and he thought we had been hacked because our virtual tour numbers had suddenly skyrocketed, and he was really worried. He basically said, Kelly, you don't pay for this kind of hits. And it turns out that Agscape, which is our sister group that does classroom education, and the Toronto District School Board had both started promoting that website as a good place to go for, you know, parents and teachers looking for at-home activities. And so our hits over the year doubled by or increased by 4,000%, which wow. Was a pretty good chance to raise some awareness about that website. And we did add 3 new tours last fall, and we're just waiting here in Ontario until things are safe to do so. And we've got a couple more in the works.
That reaches a lot of people. It reaches a lot more people, and that kind of takes off and it gets on a life of its own as well.
Exactly.
You're the Real Dirt on Farming. And I've read that. I've always been very impressed with the level that it hits. It's very easy to understand, very easy to read, and very accurate on what it really is like on a farm. That's been pretty well received, hasn't it?
Amazingly well. I was part of the first edition that we put out in 2006, and I remember, I can't tell you how wrong we were, because I remember at that time we thought, oh, in this new internet world that we're in, we don't need print copies. Everybody's going to view it online, and there's something still about a real booklet. And so I think we printed about 15,000 copies, thinking that would last us, you know, as long as we needed. And I think we sold out in about 3 weeks. And since 2006, we've gone through, we're creeping in on the 5 million mark of booklets distributed across Canada. There's a pile of work goes into producing that booklet in terms of choosing the topics. We have a national expert review committee review every fact and stat in it and challenge us on our sources sometimes to make sure that we can defend every single fact in there. And then it goes out to a consumer focus group. So we want to know that if we write it and produce it, that people are going to read it. So, you know, is it too preachy? Do the photos make sense? Do the captions make sense? Is it covering topics? And, you know, topics have changed widely since that first edition to the fifth one that went out. But I think it's one of the greatest resources we've ever produced. And I love that anybody in Canada can order copies of that, because we've all had those conversations with somebody that wants to know more.
Yeah, it's a great introduction. Answers a lot of questions, a lot of timely topics on it, and I find that it's really good at bringing that topic out in a non-confrontational way, and it doesn't raise any controversy by the way that it's presented. Yet it's accurate with its facts.
Yeah, and I'm excited because in February of 2021, the newest version of that we've partnered with Agriculture in the Classroom Canada, and they are working on a teacher's guide to go with the booklet, which is the first time that's happened. And then in partnership with their provincial organizations, they're going to be working to get it out to high school classes across Canada. So I see that is being a really cool next for that project. We also have a 12-page version. So for people that don't want the full 60-page encyclopedia, we've got a condensed 12-page with kind of the top topics.
I'm in for the 60-page. I'll read the whole thing. I love agriculture.
Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you've done. You're reaching a lot of people, particularly with that new initiative there. You're going to reach a lot of people and give accurate information for our teachers to present in the classroom. Where do you see the role of individual farmers? A lot of farmers will say, you know, I simply don't have time and I don't want to be involved in I'm afraid if I get online, I'll get involved with an activist and I don't know what to do with that. They'll overwhelm me. Where do you see the role of individuals in agriculture that want to help bridge that gap?
You know what, there's so many different ways and the internet is only one of them. And so I would say that, you know, anybody who's thinking of tiptoeing into the internet world, you know, be a lurker for a while. Watch it, you know, follow the conversation and see if it's a fit for you. A couple of years ago at a farm meeting, I had this wonderful gentleman come up to me and he said, oh, you're that Kelly Daynard girl who likes to tell people that they have to tell their stories. And he said, you're never going to get me to stand up in front of a group and tell my story. And I thought, well, I wonder where this conversation's going. But he told me that his way of advocating or reaching out is he keeps a box of The Real Dirt on Farming's in his car. And he said every time he goes into his doctor's office or the hospital for a checkup or his lawyer's office or his chiropractor, he takes a copy of it with him and he leaves it there. And that is amazing. I had another fellow reach out, and he does some speaking to service clubs. They're always looking for speakers. Service clubs are meeting monthly, now meeting online. So he offers himself up to his local community. I mean, I've had the craziest conversations in airports and airplanes. A lot of times I'll hear from people who say, oh, well, I overheard a somebody talking in the grocery store, and I introduced myself as a local farmer and asked if I could answer their questions. So, you know, you don't need to be the social media star, but we have a lot of them. But, you know, there are so many other ways you can tell your stories. And it's a little complicated right now during COVID because we're not out and about meeting friends at church or book clubs or things like that. But there are so many different ways. And I think given that we are less than, 1% of the population, especially here in Ontario, we've all got to take that chance and tell our stories.
Yeah, as an industry, we've been very... I don't know what the word is here. We've been very careful about how we tell our stories because there's always this fear that people aren't going to understand what goes on a farm and what happens. And particularly recently, we're starting to see a lot more farmers that are willing to open up their farm and have people on site. I mean, there's always biosecurity risks and that sort of thing, but it's certainly they've become more open in the last few years to doing that.
Well, and I think that some of them have amazing opportunities. We, in non-COVID times, we will host breakfast on the farms, and we cap tickets at 2,500 tickets an event. And we could have always doubled that, but the farmers that have hosted those events, without exception over the last number of years, have all said to me afterwards, "What an amazing opportunity that was!" And you know, there's just nothing that compares to somebody holding a newly hatched chick for the first time, or seeing a cow for the first time, or looking at a display of grain and they've never seen wheat before it was milled, that sort of thing. Nothing will ever compare to the tactile experiences that Farm and Food Care loves to put on. But, you know, virtual reality tours, things like that are the next best thing.
Yeah, those are great events. I know that, as you say, they're capped at 2,500 and you get lots more people that get involved in them. But the people that do come out to those events, as you say, they get a firsthand experience that they may not get anywhere else. I know that it's amazing how opportunities will present themselves. A few years ago, people from my wife's family, we were traveling north of Toronto, and they got a huge kick out of asking me, "What's that crop I see in the field?" And to me, I look at it, it's like, well, it's corn, that's soybeans, that's alfalfa, that's just a grass, like hay crop. And they're like, "I don't get how you know all that stuff." We really do know a lot more than what we think we do when we compare ourselves to someone who has no point of reference to the agricultural industry.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of years ago, Foodland Ontario helped facilitate a big event in Dundas Square in Toronto. And Farm and Food Care was there. A lot of the commodity groups in Ontario were there. They were handing out samples. You know, it was a pop-up picnic, basically. So when people came out of their office buildings, there was this pop-up free picnic in Dundas Square. And this lovely couple came up to me and asked me what was going on. I was wearing a Farm and Food Care shirt and I explained it. And then the lady said to me, "Are there any real farmers here?" And I said, "Oh my gosh, there's so many." And the folks from Egg Farmers of Ontario were wearing bright yellow egg-colored shirts, and the folks from Ontario Apple Growers were wearing bright red ones. And so I directed them to them first because they were the easiest ones to point out. And the next thing I knew, there was that lady was over at the egg booth getting a selfie with one of my favorite farmers in that booth. And I thought, like, I watched that moment happen and I thought, she's going to go home tonight and she's going to post that selfie on Facebook with a caption of, "Today I met a real farmer." And, you know, for a lot of your listeners, they'll be chuckling hearing that because we just take this world for granted, but it's not to be taken for granted at all.
No, a quick conversation with someone who has never been outside of Toronto, it doesn't take very long to understand that they've got no point of reference to what we take for granted, that the understanding of the care of livestock, the looking after of crops, and what does happen when a hailstorm comes through. And many people don't even consider that. I mean, that hailstorm spoiled their weekend, right? Because they weren't able to be outside, where that hailstorm may have spoiled a farmer's year. And there's not a great appreciation of that. There's no point of reference there.
A few years ago, when there was a late frost in April, my Toronto food influencer tour was just planned for a few weeks after that. So we took them to an apple orchard in the Niagara area where he showed all of his trees with dead blossoms on them. And, you know, it was a very different tour than the one we were planning on giving. But I had my guests basically say that they had never experienced anything so profound in their lives. They were kind of annoyed that their, you know, long weekend weather had been ruined. It was too cold to barbecue, and they watched these farmers lose their entire crops. And it's all about perspective.
Yeah, for you and I, it's tough to walk through that because we know what it means. For someone like that, it's a huge eye-opener of, what do you mean? Like, where's the next group of blossoms going to come after that? And it's like, well, they're not. That's done. We wait till next year for that. So if farmers or any of our listeners want to get involved and support Farm and Food Care Ontario, how do they go about doing that?
Oh my gosh, there's so many different ways. And I guess I'll put in a plug that, you know, we are entirely funded by Ontario Agriculture. So by commodity groups, by agribusinesses, by great members like Trillium, and by individual farmers. And without that sort of support, we would not exist. A lot of people think that we are a government-funded organization, but we're an Ontario Agriculture-funded organization. So, I mean, obviously the easiest one, the first one would be to take out a membership, or we're a registered charity now, so to make a donation. But we're always looking for people who are interested in being volunteers at our events, who might be willing to do a speaking engagement if we've got a request come in here and they're looking. And if somebody is interested in, you know, dabbling in the social media realm, we'll often take calls and try to help them get started as well. We do an awful lot of training for farmers. We do something called Speak Up Training, which is a program now offered by our two sister groups as well. And hundreds of farmers have taken that. And it's just a way of, you know, making people think a little bit more. We work in a complicated industry. We in agriculture are very bad at using terminology and acronyms that sometimes even we don't understand. So, you know, the Speak Up workshops, which we're now even doing online, take farmers through that and try to talk about ways that you can engage with consumers in a way that they will understand.
That's awesome. Farm and Food Care does fantastic work. I know that the outreaches that you've got between the website, The Real Dirt on Farming, and other initiatives like Breakfast on the Farm have been well received over the years, and certainly really important to all of us that are really concerned about agriculture thriving and everybody understanding, because we are as a society getting a long distance away from the farm. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, how do they get a hold of you? What's the website, and what's the best way to engage with yourselves?
Yeah, for sure. So our website is farmfoodcareon for Ontario.org. You can send an info to info@farmfoodcare.org. Look up our phone number on the website and give us a call, because we're always interested in kind of continuing this. I am biased. I wear my heart on my sleeve when it comes to this organization, but I think that we play a really critical role in Ontario agriculture. We've got some tremendous successes behind us, and our success is, you know, the whole industry's success, because if we can continue to have these conversations and build the relationships, the sky's the limit. And I'll add, you know, last year, the Canadian Center for Food Integrity, they always do, again, this focus group testing. And last year, they showed double-digit increases in consumers' trust of the Canadian food system. So, you know, I'd like to think that groups like Farm and Food Care play a small part in that success. But I also think, you know, especially during COVID, consumers would have watched, you know, a few hiccups in the supply chain in the beginning of the year and then seen the industry recover and we're still feeding our country. And that gives an awful lot of reasons for confidence.
It certainly does. I think coming through COVID, certainly for working within the industry here and understanding the challenges that that the industry faced, I think we came through it in remarkably good shape. And that's a great news story that people need to know and need to hear. And groups like yourselves that are really involved in making sure that they do hear that story.
It was a really interesting time, you know, in agriculture because consumers in Canada have never seen empty shelves. And for a few weeks there, early days, you know, it was hard to find milk or eggs or flour or, you know, a few other things. And I think that gave an awful lot of people pause for thought. I mean, we do hear about rising food prices, but I heard from the Canadian Federation of Agriculture last week that Food Freedom Day, which is the day that all Canadians have on average earned enough money to pay their grocery bill for the whole year, it's still going to be in early February. It's about 2 weeks away, only one day later than last year. So we still have one of the cheapest food systems in the world and one of the safest.
Really puts it in perspective, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Kelly. We've been speaking with Kelly Daynard from Farm and Food Care Ontario. It seems like we just kind of get started here. There's so much more to talk about. You'll have to come back and join us again sometime.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks for listening to The Back 40. Join us next time when we speak with Marty Seymour, Director of Industry Relations with Farm Credit Canada, about Canada's Ag Day. You've been listening to The Back 40, brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.